going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Here we go. It's hour three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a good day. We are going to have the Tyler Booker press conference here up at the Star before too long. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan and day two coverage coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. Brian, you were saying the Cowboys pick at 44 will happen somewhere late in that 6 o'clock hour, maybe 6:50 or so?
Yeah, I think the number was 6:51 to 6:56.
Right on. Well, it'll be fun. You know, two picks for you on a Friday night. Go big. Hopefully the Cowboys, nailed it last night, stopped a trend of failure first-round picks, and hopefully they continue with good work tonight. The track record in the second round has been they've taken a lot of big chances, and, I don't think their hit rate is high. It's probably below average. But who would be the big risk-reward player tonight if the Cowboys wanted to continue with that trend of taking a guy maybe with a checkered past or an injured past?
I think it's probably Will Johnson, the corner from Michigan. I'm pretty confident Ravel's going to be fine with that. It's just like how quick does he get back up to speed. But the bigger risk, I think, is Will Johnson. I mean, it sounds like, you know, what he's dealing with, some lower extremity injuries, there might be something down. There's various reports on him, but also with some of the concerns I had with watching the tape, not that he's not a good player, like I think this would be a good value to get him, but that would be the most like possible, oh my gosh, does he turn out to be a bust second rounder or does he end up being one of the better corners in the league?
Yeah, I think Jerry loves trying to get first round talent here at this point, and that's why, you know, Jalen Smith, a lot of times, you know, we'd heard that they wouldn't even necessarily downgrade a guy. They just want to know what the value is, and that's how, you know, super talented guys would get picked in the second round from them.
Man, I'll tell you what, I mentioned about, you know, Mike Green and that whole situation with him, Luther Burden. It seems like to me maybe a little bit difficult to deal with, but I think Ravel, when you start to talk, this guy, not injured, if not with a knee injury, and Dr. Dan Cooper did the surgery on this kid to put him back together, if not for that, he would not be on this board right now. And you start to talk about a need that the Dallas Cowboys had at corner. I think this would be this potentially could have home run potential.
Mm-hmm.
If you get this guy and all of a sudden you get him to training camp, you get him back going, and he starts to practice. When you're 6'2 and you're over 190 pounds and you cover the way he does and the way he moves, and you know, if people are staying away because of the knee, boy, I tell you what, I would sure ask Jim Maurer, okay, tell me why I can't take this guy. Tell me again why can't I take this guy? And if Jim doesn't give me a really, really great answer, I'm thinking about handing the card in on a guy like this.
So Ravel, Will Johnson, Mike Green. I mean, Cowboys of past did not shy away from, domestic violence here and there.
No.
You know, I don't know if they're thinking along those lines, but that would fit the bill here with the Cowboys. Like the balance of Jerry Jones as the GM, those kind of players have happened quite a bit. But Wolchuk, you're feeling Quinshon Judkins over there, aren't you? The running back from Ohio State here at 44.
I am. I just think that he fits kind of.
That's with Henderson like gone building. Or with Henderson still there? I'm going to ask that question again.
I think Henderson's going to be gone.
Okay.
So but I don't know how they have them stacked. I mean, okay. It could be that they like Judkins more than Henderson, okay. But I'm going to say it's with Henderson gone. Okay. I've always kind of thought that if Henderson made it to the second round, Chicago just seems like a great fit for him with Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if he makes it past Cleveland and Chicago with both of those picks because he is an explosive player. Like I could see Ben Johnson looking at Trayvon Henderson and thinking, that could be Jahmyr Gibbs-like for me in my offense.
But you guys are confident either Johnson, Henderson, or Judkins will be there at 44, as long as a team other than the Bears and Browns don't take a running back in front of you.
Yeah, I think Johnson can be there at 44. The question then becomes, like, if you get a phone call, do you want to risk moving back a little bit?
No.
Or you just want to take your dude?
Yeah, I think you want to take
your
guy.
Pull the trigger and take him?
I would love to get that fourth-round pick back, though. I'll tell you what. I would like to get that back. Is there any position that you think, based on just guys that are still available, that there could be a surprise position that we're like, we think it's the core four still of wide receiver, running back, D tackle, corner,
safety.
A safety could make an appearance.
Xavier Watts from Notre Dame would be on my board for sure.
Watts, Makuba. They met with Makuba. And then, I mean, Nick Emenwori is still there, who a lot of people thought would go in the first round. We are not as high on Emenwori, but I don't know how the Cowboys feel about him. They might love him.
I think Watts is one of the best safeties in the draft.
Yeah, he's just one of the best defensive players. Yeah, dude's incredible.
And last night, I know that we had a situation where Starks went to the Ravens. You know, I felt like that with what you have with Kyle Hamilton, Watts would have been a better pair for him, I think.
Oh, really?
Playing as a guy that could play back, play center field, could play in coverage. Starks is a good player, but the pairing, if they would have drafted Watts, they're up the middle would have been tremendous.
Watts is a true free safety.
Yeah.
I mean, there's my first line is I'm not sure how you can dislike this player.
Yeah.
Like he is one of the most fun tape to watch. He's super productive. He's incredible. And I also love Kevin Winston Jr. out of Penn State, but he also is coming off of an injury.
All righty. It's the G-Bag Nation here on the Fan. Tyler Booker press conference coming up here any minute, you know, up there at the Star. His walk in, I think the thing of legends, I think everybody's aiming for a high bar now if you want to beat that. Just the enthusiasm, the energy that he brought to the table was awesome. The most annoying thing for me personally about these drafts is watching the Eagles take great defensive players from college late. But then beyond that, I don't know how you guys feel about this. Maybe I'm just a little get off my lawn about this, but where do they keep finding the nonstop stream of super crazed fans who are willing to yell, let's go, and come on into the camera like their team just scored a touchdown? I'm thinking, is this file footage that they have stored? But they're all unique. I imagine they're going around to the draft being like, okay, now we have Jags fans who are basically like, you know, a 10 out of 10 energy-wise.
Mm.
It's 9:30 on a Thursday night in the middle of the offseason. Where do they keep finding this stream of people? Is this methamphetamine?
It could be.
I'll tell you. It's
making a comeback.
I saw Matt Pittman.
Come on. Let's go. Yeah. Your team picked 90 minutes ago.
Yep.
I don't know what it is.
But I think they might give them the like those late night talk shows where it's like, hey, everybody laugh after the joke gets
made. Applause sign.
You know, yeah, they may have something like that where they're kind of coaching them up. Hey, when you see that camera, you go buck wild.
Cheer.
Act like you guys just won the Super Bowl.
I guess if you get on TV a couple of times, it fuels you to maybe do it more. And then your whole 4 hours is spent trying to get the attention of the cameras. That seems exhausting.
I do presume all these people are just hammered, too.
That could do it. Yeah.
Plus the meth you were talking about.
We had a couple of tables last night at Pluckers. They were turning up pretty good.
Yeah,
you know, you get that booze flowing through you, some good old American football, you can go for hours.
Bro, we had real Raiders fans in the building last night.
No way.
They were
cops had to get called
loud
at any point.
And proud. Yeah, I was waiting for the 5-0 to pull up.
I'm amazed of how like non-football savvy Lucius's group was. They just couldn't get their picks right, you know?
Yeah, the effort was there. Like they wanted that 750 but Patron
they were
shot.
They were more interested in like winning the party battle than being
they were inebriated
than the good general manager. They're like, we don't
need, they were doing it right.
We don't need the mac and cheese. We just need more alcohol, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep these drink specials rolling. Well, salute to Pluckers for having us out. We've been doing this for so many years now. Yeah. Looking forward already to doing it again next year, but not before we get to round two and three tonight. I have some day two mock drafts for you. This is The Athletic. And just going through this, it really shows how insane it's going to be to watch all these players that we like for the Cowboys going for about an hour before the Cowboys pick at about 6:50. Shador is at the top to Cleveland. I don't know what to make of you know, this whole situation, but for me, the way that I took his quotes last night, I was like, you know what? I'm buying it. This guy was just like, everything's going to be fine. You know, I think for Shador that what we saw was true confidence. Like, I believe in myself. I don't need the validation that someone else thinks I'm good.
Very poised.
We got all the money in the world already.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to a team tomorrow, and it's going to be fine. Like, I think if you are too emotional, you would have a breakdown, and you would storm off. And you know, I just think he took that so well that did. I would put that as a plus for last night.
I will say this, though. And I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not trying to pin this on him for any reason. He's very, very poised in front of a camera with a microphone in front of his face. He's very calm that way. I wouldn't be surprised if he went into his room and just broke down. You know, there's a lot of pressure on him, a lot of eyeballs. His future, just think about, you know, if he was a first-round quarterback and all this, that, and other. Yeah, this is going to fuel him and stuff wherever he gets picked, and hopefully he'll go and do great things. But, man, I don't know how he couldn't just go into his room, close the door, and just sit there and maybe have a good cry. You know, of all the things that, you know, that were ahead of him. I think they're all still ahead of him, but just the expectation that this guy at one time talked about being the top quarterback in the country, you know? And he went from a guy being the top quarterback in the country to being a guy that went through the first round. I know
it is interesting, like what's really going on between those ears, because you know he's never going to let the world see him.
He's never going to do that, because he's going to crack jokes with his brother. His brother's going to say, wow, if they're treating you this way, how do you think they're going to treat me? You know?
But even that's difficult to do. I think a lot of guys in the same situation, you would have seen the visible sadness, frustration, anger, embarrassment, on the camera.
He's very good.
Him being able to hold it all together whatever he did behind closed doors.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really impressive last night.
I would not think that he didn't. I could believe him just going, and then the weight of it, you know, just now. Yeah. Okay.
And he might still end up in Cleveland. Yeah. He's probably like, cool, I don't have to go to Cleveland, and now he's got to sleep another night.
Could still happen. His guy, Travis Hunter.
Luther Burden to the Texans at 34 in this bad boy, so that'd be a bummer. I'm kind of excited for Luther Burden and a running back to be on the board at 44 together. That'd be interesting. Tonight,
that would be fun.
He's quite a talent. Brian said he's 10 on your board.
10 on my board.
He's super talented.
Yep. Mike Green, Edge Marshall, 35. Then Henderson to the Browns, 36. Okay. Will Johnson, 37 to the Raiders. This is what I'm saying. With all these names we've been talking about for 5 months, they're all going to go between 33 and 43.
You're going to see them just go boop, boop, boop.
And there'll be a couple that should be blinking to us as a red light if you've been listening to Broadus and Woolchuck talk about these guys. The 38 is Jalen Knoll. That's a wide receiver, right?
Yeah, that's Iowa State.
Wow.
Smaller wide receiver, yeah.
39, Bears get the offensive tackle from Minnesota. The Saints do Tyler Shuck at 40.
Yeah, I've heard
that's loud right now.
Yeah.
Schefter and everybody is saying they like Shuck better than Sanders.
You fool. I love your Goodfellas laugh here. That's classic. You pulled that meme off so well.
I tell you that Jane Slater's down there, and I alerted her. I said, listen, I'm hearing Tyler Shuck is the guy. And she's like, yeah, I'm hearing that too.
Well, hey, you know what?
New Orleans
might end up getting a star, because I didn't think Bo Nix would be any good.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we don't have to see Shuck's family as much as we had to see Jackson Dart's last night. Holy cow.
Shuck.
That family must have got a combined 20 minutes. Yeah. It was like the Jackson Dart family reunion. Every time I turned around, there was a new kid coming out of the woodwork.
What's your deal? You just got tired of them?
I don't know what it was.
There's a new kid coming out of the woodwork.
I might have been hating. I might have been hating. That's a good-looking kid.
Did you give it a situation? Yeah. Did you make the comment while you were watching there at Pluckers? Did you go, oh, God, why do we have to see these kids again? What are we doing up there?
Yes. They were snot-nosed brat cousins all over the television constantly whenever you went to Dart. I want to see more of his mom, you know, if I'm being honest. 41, the Bears get the edge from Boston, Boston College. Donovan?
Donovan Ikeruke?
Wolchek's got his name.
I think Broadus has it.
Ezerike?
Yeah. Milrow with the Jets, Bama, Shamar Turner, defensive tackle, going to San Francisco there. Then Caleb Johnson.
Who?
Shamar Turner.
San Francisco.
Yeah, defensive tackle going to San Francisco. That leaves Caleb Johnson on the board.
Yeah.
That's the ideal running back situation for you from this point forward.
That's for me, but I'm
simpatico with you on that.
Last time they listened to me was 2005, and so we'll see. But that's the guy. I think he would be a great scheme fit for probably what they want to do.
I don't know.
6'1", 224, that type of runner.
4.57.
Yeah. That's thick.
I'm just telling you, man.
He looks faster than that. But
no, he plays faster than that. And how many 30-yard runs do you have in an NFL game?
He just
must
be moving his arms really fast or something. The clock doesn't lie.
It's yards per carry on this guy. Big time yards per carry.
Right on. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. I don't know.
I'm trying to sell you on this one.
262 touches, not a single fumble.
I mean, if you're running 4.57 at 22 years old, what's 27 years old?
Yeah. It's,
you know, we're gonna be Zeke here looking like Bam Morris by the time you're in year three. You know who Bam Morris is, Brian. It's not a good thing.
Bam Dawson.
We got a draft dump coming up, don't we, Wolchuk?
Yeah, we can dump it. Let's get to some reaction from the Tyler Booker pick. We'll hear from your former coach. We'll hear from Micah Parsons. And then all the latest rumor-rooskies. Maybe a Cowboy special in the third round that'll make Brian Broaddus and I pretty happy. That's next.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Here we go, up to the star Tyler Booker press conference here on your home of the Cowboys.
And David was at the first meeting I ever came to when I bought the team, and I've never forgotten it as long as I live. I was almost shell-shocked that it would have that deal right there. But this is a happening within itself. Y'all get some pictures of them with the group all around with them, too.
All right, Dave, start us out.
Hi, Tyler. David Moore, Dallas Morning News.
How you doing?
I know when you were talking last night, you were talking about how the offensive line here has always been a staple and you followed it kind of growing up. Any individual Cowboys offensive linemen in particular that you followed or you like to think you've patterned your game or it resembles in any way?
Well, I've definitely always watched Zach Martin and Tyron Smith. Those two are just legends, two Hall of Famers, two who have really broken success down to a science, and they were consistent for so long. And to see them retire, I feel like I'm getting old because I grew up watching them. And then like one signature play that I remember watching is when the Cowboys were playing the Steelers. They were in Pittsburgh, and Zeke broke that run to put the to ice the game essentially. And I'll never forget that. I was just like, man, like that offensive line is really, like really winning the game for him. Like that was years and years ago. That was like what, 2015, 2016, 16. That was close. Yeah. So. I remember that game and I remember that play and I was like, wow, like that's what offensive line play can do. Like just part of like the Red Sea. I think it was like zone or split zone to the right. But yeah, like I that stands out in my memory.
Todd.
Tyler Archer with ESPN. What's this day been like for you to, since you've gotten to the Star and seen where you're going to be for the next however many years?
It's been great. It's great to call a place like this home, and me being at Alabama for the past 3 years have really prepared me for this moment and this day. Alabama is a place known for greatness. There's a lot of tradition. There's a legacy there. There's an aura when you walk into the building and you feel it. Like you feel like you have a standard to live up to. And just as I felt like I'm walking in a Malmore, that's how I felt walking into the facility today. There's a lot to live up to. There's a legacy. There's a standard that's been upheld here for years, and I'm looking forward to continue to further that.
John Michaud with The Athletic, expanding on that a little bit more, what was it like, you know, how does it compare to, obviously IMG is as big as there is in high school and Alabama for college, and then walking in this facility compared to when you walked into those?
It's truly a blessing overall. You know, like as you mentioned, I went to IMG, the biggest high school, went to Alabama, the biggest college. Now I'm with the Dallas Cowboys, the biggest pro team. So it's truly a blessing. And going into each level, obviously the buildings get a little bit bigger, and this is definitely the biggest out of all three. It's just truly a blessing to be here, and I just want to take this time to shout out my family while I'm looking at them. They're sitting over there, and I wouldn't be where I am without them. They essentially had to watch their son grow up over FaceTime because I left home when I was 14 to chase this football dream. So for them to have the trust in me and love and really making that sacrifice, I just want to say I thank y'all and I love y'all.
I'll give you guys that.
Calvin Watkins, Dallas Morning News. You went to IMG. How did that shape you to go to the next level?
IMG shaped me for the next level because it was essentially the next level. You're pretty much doing a college schedule. So we practiced in the morning. We went to school in the afternoon. We played a national schedule, so I was used to traveling. I was used to scheduling my time, and we would be done with our day around 5 or 6 o'clock. So you have all that time before you go to bed, so you have an opportunity to get ahead of the schoolwork, to get some recovery in, to get an extra lift in, so just as college was. So IMG definitely prepared me for Alabama.
To commute from Connecticut to Jersey, you got a Bergen Catholic, but you had to leave, go to Florida. How tough was that as a young man? I think you were 14, 15 when you had to move to Florida. How tough was that?
It was tough, but it molded me into who I am today. Like, I feel like as a man, nobody grows in comfort. You have to be in situations where you're uncomfortable. That's how you grow as a man, when you have to figure some stuff out, when you have to figure out, like, okay, how bad do I really love football? How bad do I really want this? Because you can ask my parents. Like, there were days where I was like, man, I'm tired. I want to come home as a 14 and 15-year-old. And they just reminded me of my goal. They reminded me why I was there. And they told me that if you just keep on working, you stick to it, everything's going to happen the way it's supposed to. So, again, thank y'all for keeping me on track.
Tom.
Tommy Arch, Dallas Cowboys. Tyler, getting to see Connor Riley and Ramon Chinyoung earlier. What were those conversations like, and what have they told you about how excited they are to get to work with you?
Yeah, it was just a whole lot of excitement. We really embraced each other. We had a great time on the 30 visit, just seeing how Coach Riley coaches and to see how he coaches. That's a way that I learned really well. He's very, very animated, very loud, very demonstrative, and very much like my past two coaches in college, Coach Wolfer and Coach Cap. Like, both those guys same way, very demonstrative, very loud, very animated, and I respond well to that kind of coach. So I'm very excited to get to work and to learn from Coach.
Earlier on the visit, too, we saw you go to Luke Casey and get fitted for some boots for the first time. It was your first pair, right? What was that experience like?
It was great. So, actually, I was in Dallas training for the combine, and I went to the Stockyards, and there was a boot store. I was like, man, it would be pretty cool to get some boots. But I tried them on, they didn't fit. So I was very upset. And ever since then, I'd be like, man, I want a pair of cowboy boots. So for me to walk in and get fitted for a pair of Lucchese boots, that was pretty cool. And even have my foot measured the way it's supposed to, that added to the greatness of the day. So now I know what size I am in cowboy boots. So I'll be rocking some around the facility pretty soon.
Nick
Harris, Four Star Telegram. You trained here during the pre-draft process. You had a 30 visit. I know at the end of the day you just want to be drafted. First round would be cool. But did you dream at all during the process about landing here?
Yes, the entire process. So I actually trained here last May as well. I spent some time with Duke Manyweather again, and just being in this area. I have a close friend, Jax Porter. He's from this area. So just spending some time with him, I was like, man, it would be really nice to live around here. And that's something that people don't think about. Like, obviously, we're here to play football. We're here to win championships. We're here to work. But at the end of the day, this is a place where you you want to get drafted to a place to where you can raise a family and plant your roots. And for me to be a Dallas Cowboy, for one, to have that honor to be a Dallas Cowboy and play football here, but for me to live in this great city of Dallas as well, somewhere to plant my roots, somewhere I'm looking forward to planting my roots, is just the best of both worlds. So I've definitely dreamed about having this be my landing spot. And I just want to thank the Jones family for taking me and making me a Cowboy.
Head coach, you are his first pick.
Yes.
What are your emotions around that, and any added pressure, or you know, have y'all talked about that? What's that been about?
We haven't really talked about that yet, and there's no added pressure. All he asked me to do is just come in and be me every day, and that's what I'm going to do. So I'm very excited to come in and be Tyler Book every day.
Joe.
Joe Hoyt, DLS Sports. Tyler, you talked last night about how players will do pump up music and pre-workout to get excited for games, and how much you love to just take away the love for their game and seeing that in their eyes. Two-part question. What's your pregame routine, and how many moments do you remember last year where you took the love away from opponents' eyes?
Okay, so my pregame routine, when I wake up, I definitely listen to some gospel music. I do that every day. Give glory to God, just spend some time with God. Like I love music, and I feel like that's a great way for me to connect with God earlier in the day, get my day right. And then from then on, it really depends on how I'm feeling. So I just use music to like kind of level me out. So if I'm very amped up and animated too early before the game, that's when I put on something smooth like Rick James, the Isleys, Marvin Gaye. That's my kind of music. But if I need to get amped up, that's when I turn on the Jadakiss, the Jay-Z, the 50 Cent, the Nas. So it really just depends on how I'm feeling throughout the day. Once I get to the stadium, that's when I put on my pregame workout clothes. I take a lap around the field, and I just breathe. And I take that lap around the field just to really, like, claim that space and, like, really, like, essentially mark my territory. Like, this is my field. I'm going to dominate today. Do a quick little routine, and then I call my great-grandmother. We pray over the phone. And then once I get back in the locker room, I'm big into sports psychology. So I practice something called visualization. So I have the openers to the game. And so I have the openers to the game. I close my eyes and mentally put myself in the headspace like of the game. So I'm thinking about what my gloves feel like, what my cleats feel like, socks, what it smells like, how loud it is in the game, what jersey numbers I'm going to be going against, what their jerseys look like. So mentally, I'm already in the game. And then I'm just thinking about those openers. So, like, let's say we got SI zone, duo, and then play action. So I'm thinking about those plays in order. Got my eyes closed. I'm seeing those plays against a four-down front, an odd front, odd wide, what they're going to do if they stunt, what we're going to do if the safety rolls over, just thinking about all the variables. So I'm just checking off every checklist in my head before the game. So I'm essentially playing the first quarter of the game already. Like, a lot of people feel like they need that first hit. That's how I get my first hit. And then an example of me taking the love away from my opponents. Man, my favorite is definitely playing LSU this year, because they're a rowdy crowd. It's the SEC. It's just like anywhere else in the SEC. Like, it's going to be a loud crowd. It's going to be rowdy. They're going to be talking a lot of smack to you. And when we played LSU this year, the stadium was empty by the beginning of the fourth quarter. We were beating them so bad, our coaches weren't even in the press box anymore. They're on the sideline with us. So that was a good example of me taking love away from my opponent. Playing Missouri, having a shutout against them, that was another example. And then probably my favorite right next to LSU was 4th and 31. When we beat Auburn, and it was funny because you see everybody coming down, getting ready to storm the field. You see everybody's flashlights on, and then when Jalen throws that ball and Bob catches it, and then everybody's flashlights goes off and they just start leaving the stadium. That was the best feeling ever.
That's very good.
Saad Youssef, The Athletic. Tyler, Duke was on a local podcast earlier today and was raving about your leadership. What is your leadership style, and how do you, as a young player, plan to bring that into a room that already has some guys like Tyler Smith and even Cooper Beebe, a young guy, but has been here already?
First and foremost, when it comes to leadership, you have to earn the right to lead. So that's what I'll be looking forward to do first. You earn the right to lead by being a producer on the field, by doing everything right off the field, and being somebody that your teammates can – that being someone that your teammates love, trust, and most importantly, respect. So that's where it comes. That's my approach when it comes to being a leader. But like the kind of leader I am, I'm a teammate by teammate approach when it comes to leadership, because you can't, just like you can't coach everybody the same, you can't lead everybody the same way, but you can lead them fair. So obviously some people respond well to me getting after them, be like, hey, let's go, pick it up. Me yelling at them, getting after them. But some people, when I take that approach, they may shut down, and then you won't get anything out of that teammate. So it really just depends on who you're leading. But that's why it's so important to have that love, trust, and respect from your teammates, because once you have that, you know who you're leading, you know which approach to take, and you know how to get the most out of your teammates.
Brian, obviously we're getting a flavor of his of his routine and all those kind of things. Just what stood out to you in the way when you had the conversations with him in the 30 visit?
This. You guys have listened to him. I mean, it was just authentic. It was real. His confidence, the way he carries himself, which you guys are witnessing right now, is what we shared with the entire day, basically.
Brianna Aldridge, CBS Texas. Tyler, a lot of players often on draft day will share their draft moment, going back, reflecting on how that day was so special. I'm just wondering if there's anything in particular from yesterday that's kind of something that will always stick with you.
The prayer right before the draft. Like, I had everybody that was in the green room with me. We prayed beforehand. I just asked God to send me to this spot that was going to fit me the best, somewhere I was going to be able to plant my roots and really grow and really come into manhood, you know? So that's what I prayed for. So that'll forever stand out to me. And then just seeing my little brother Mason there, like, the whole time, like, that's my boy. Like, he's, like, I feel like, like, as a man who has a younger brother, like, however well he does in life, like, that's up to me. Like, I'm laying out the blueprint for him. So for him to be able to sit there and see me get drafted, like, Mace, I hope you see that, and I hope you know and understand that if you just listen to mommy and daddy like I did, you can have the same future.
And then my second question, when is Trina coming to Dallas?
Trina's going to come to Dallas once I get everything settled. Once I get everything settled, because the terrarium, it takes a lot to transport. So actually, my dad and I, when I was training in Dallas, I had my dad fly all the way from Connecticut. He met me in Dallas, and we drove 8 hours all the way to Tuscaloosa because I didn't want them to go without their tank for too long. So Trina will be coming to Dallas soon, but we just got to be strategic with it.
Ed Werder, WFA. Tyler, having played in the SEC against a lot of guys who, like you, are first-round picks, how does that prepare you to be better able to make that transition yourself to playing some of the great players in the NFL that you'll go against every week?
Well, that's why you play in the SEC, to go against those great players. And iron sharp as iron. You don't get better by going against lesser competition. And that was the whole point of me going to Alabama. Like, being at Alabama, you're everybody's national championship. You're everybody's Super Bowl at Alabama. Everybody's going to give you your best shot. There's going to be trick plays. They're going to put stuff in front of you that they never put on film before. So you're going to get everybody's best shot at Alabama. So iron sharp as iron. And I've gotten better going against some of the best defensive lines in college football the past 3 years.
Can you make guys at the NFL level wish they hadn't played football when they play against you?
It'll happen with time, but I know I have a lot to learn. I have a lot to improve on before I get to that point. But that mindset is always going to remain the same.
Garrett Bonnell, CBS Sports. Tyler, you interacted with Michael Parsons a little bit after you were drafted last night. What was that like, connecting with him, and your thoughts on practicing against him on a regular basis?
It was really cool, and that's somebody who brings a lot of energy. He from the outside looking in, he seems like he's the heartbeat of the defense, really the heartbeat of the team. So to have an interaction with him like that already, that was really cool. I'm very excited to practice against him because, as I just mentioned, iron sharp as iron, and that was another reason why I went to Alabama. Like, obviously, I'm getting that in-game competition, but I'm getting that in-practice competition. Like, I'm going against guys like Will Anderson, Dallas Turner, Henry Toto every single day, like, especially as a freshman. Like, that's how you get better, iron sharp as iron.
Back to Ed.
Jerry and Steven, you guys have made a big draft pick investment and a big financial investment in Tyler. What's your impression been of him as you've listened to him here and engaged with him throughout the day?
Well, when he was on the board, I was speaking, and Steven, can you talk today?
I'm better.
Better. All right. Really. But seriously, listening to Tyler, I'm reminded that I don't know that we ever see a Super Bowl that I would have a chance to be a part of if it weren't for Michael Irvin. And Michael, we know the competitor. We know the challenger, and we know the spirit. But the part of Michael Irvin that was most impressive, because he was the leader. He was the leader. For instance, when Alvin Harper caught off the goal line against San Francisco in the NFC Championship game, and nobody could believe that play was called, Michael and Alvin Harper were in the huddle together, and Harper got in the spot that Michael might have thought he should have had because they both thought the ball would go to Harper. Of course, Harper ran 80-something yards right off the goal line, and we hadn't stopped them all day. They made 600 yards, and we won the game and won the Super Bowl. And I was talking to him about that, and I said, and he said, because I'd heard that he told Alvin, he said, you be a man, whatever you do, you don't even think about doing anything but take that thing across the middle. You don't even hesitate. You grab that ball and you run to the total end, but don't flinch. We've all counting on you. And he said, have I ever let you down, Alvin? Have I ever let you down? And Alvin, of course, said he hadn't. The rest is history. He made the play. Michael later told me, you don't think that transpired just because we were on the goal line in San Francisco in the huddle there. He said that started 4 years ago. And he said, you don't call on each other right at huddle time or right in the game. You put it in a long way back. And he said, Alvin got a call to come talk to his Saratoga club in his hometown. And he was trying to ask me what would say. And I said, how would you like me to go with you to your hometown, Alvin? And I'll go down there with you, and we'll both go to the Saratoga Club. He said, you have to put that in sometime years before you call on it in a football game. That's looking around the corner. That's awareness. I think this boy's got it now.
Same. There he is, Jerry Jones, tying a beautiful ribbon with a great story about Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper around the Tyler Booker draft press conference here. It's the GBAG Nation on the Fan. Very excited about that pick. Around 2 and 3 coverage picks up at 6 o'clock. Broadus is already on his way up to the Star, and we'll preview this Rangers-Giants series with Jared Sandler next in the Nation. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan Hour. Insane coverage of this draft. We'll resume coming up at 6 o'clock. Broadus should be pulling into the Star here real soon. Wooly Bully's going to be on his way up there after we talk with Sands here about your Texas Rangers. It's brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. And Jared Sandler joins us now here on The Fan, buddy. How are we doing today?
Guys, I'm great. I'm here at Oracle Park in San Francisco. This is one of my favorite ballparks in baseball. I love coming out here, and hopefully we get to experience some Rangers win.
Yes, that would be fun. I guess that starts tonight with getting some hits off old Justin Verlander. How's he looking these days?
Yeah, he hasn't had a great year. I don't know that it means much for the Rangers. They haven't handed him a losing decision in the regular season since 2018 when I think that at that time, the matchup of Ariel Jurado and Justin Verlander, again, in 2018, the Astros coming off a World Series, one of the best teams in baseball. I think it was the steepest odds for a regular season baseball game in, like, X amount of years. And the Rangers actually won that game. Ariel Jurado was really good. Justin Verlander wasn't. But the Rangers haven't beaten him in a regular season game since. Now, they did, of course, beat him in Game 2 of the ALCS in 2023. But doesn't matter how he's been going in the regular season. He doesn't lose to the Rangers, but hopefully they can turn that around. He's a veteran. He's healthy enough to have good enough stuff, but the command has oddly been off for Justin Verlander to start the season.
All right, Jared, if you can help me out, what went wrong last night? I'm seeing 3-run home run inning. This is amazing. Rangers have this. And then I get out of the draft and it's like, what the hell just happened?
Well, I don't know. Should we ask Marcus Mosher his thoughts? I feel like
he's got it charted.
He
might have stats for us, Jared.
I think he just box scores things, Sandler.
I don't know him. I've never met him, but I definitely got a kick out of looking at your Twitter back and forth with him on the bus from Sacramento to San Francisco last night. I think I texted you as well. What's that?
I'm glad I could help entertain you.
Yeah, it was great. So what went wrong? I mean, you can look at the ninth inning, right? And we always do. Whenever there's a lead change, we always look in you know, that part of the game. And Leody Taveras' error definitely didn't help. I don't know that it ultimately made a difference because the next ball in play probably would have scored the runner anyway. Luke Jackson, for the first time this year, asked to get a four-out save. And Jacob Wilson was able to deliver the hit. But to me, you know, there's a source of bad luck, White Langford losing the ball in the sky that led to the only two runs that Jacob deGrom gave up. Not an error, because just the way that they score things. But to me, guys, at the end of the day, you score three runs, you're asking for it. And you score three runs off of JT Ginn and the A's relievers, and that's not a strong suit for the Athletics. It just isn't. And, you know, this bullpen has been unbelievable in protecting one-run leads. Like, that is the toughest assignment for a bullpen. It is the toughest lead to protect is a one-run lead, right? Just the math. They have been dynamite at that. You cannot continue to go back to that well as frequently as the Rangers have so far this year. And so you can look at the end of the game, but to me, it's just the general offensive production. Three runs in that game is not going to cut it. And it was impressive the way they got those three runs with three home runs in an inning. But yeah, you score just three runs, it's tough to look at anything other than the lack of offensive production in that game. And the Rangers had opportunities. They had the bases loaded in the first, and Josh Young in his first at bat popped out. He then hit a home run in his next at bat. And then later in that inning, in which the Rangers hit three home runs, they loaded the bases again. And Dolis Garcia, unfortunately, wasn't able to deliver in that spot. So they had opportunities last night, but they just didn't get the hit that they needed to really open it up.
How impressive was DeGrom?
Yeah, he was pretty good. Again, you know, I would have liked to have seen what things would have looked like had he not given up, you know, that routine fly ball off of Lawrence Butler's bat that ultimately contributed to the two-run inning for the Athletics. But he looked really good, and, you know, I think it's another encouraging step forward for Jacob. The velocity was strong again, and, yeah, I mean, I think that you know, he might not be full DeGrom, but he's pretty close mm-hmm. to it. And, you know, he's a guy, every time he takes the mound, you know, you feel pretty good about your chances to win.
Love it, Jared. Enjoy San Francisco. And thanks for that Rangers preview brought to you by Blue Nail Roofing. Have a great weekend.
See you, fellas.
There he goes. Too.